Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Nazarita Goldhammer and Kevin Boilo, co-host at Epis Radio. It is December 4th, 2023. And the title of our show is The Continuing Exploration of the Interrelational Self and the Human Intimacy with Nature. We actually started this topic a year ago. This will be our 50th week. And so in two more sessions, this will be, it will be one full year. And it just grew. I grew in my understanding through this conversation. And I think it's leading to some really wonderful insights and transformation. I also want to mention that the earth science design firm, and that means design firm, interior design, exterior design, public space design, designs that take into account the ecosystem, the thoughtful, non-exploitative treatment of ecosystems within which we live, and all the beings, the separate beings in those ecosystems. So it's really been a wonderful 11-year research journey. We are at earthsciencedesign.com. We have just started our school. And that's the ESD school, Earth Science Design School. And our topics are going to range from design proper, a new way of thinking about designing our material world, to philosophy, history, psychoanalysis, a lot of mathematics, climate science, geological science, global science, environmental science, biology. But critical thinking about these disciplines and critical thinking about the human anthropology, the way we are in the world. I'm proud to say that I'm vegan. Our design work is 100% vegan. It's not kind of, sort of, it's not vegan on Mondays and Wednesdays. It's 100% vegan. If you are a person who's interested in the ESD school and you want to live a new, completely nonviolent life, and design your living space in a nonviolent way, in a vegan way, then we're the choice for you. Our firm now has offices in California, Montana, and New York, and we're planning on growing. There's a lot of need for it, and we've gotten overwhelming interest, actually. I don't think that's a misnomer. I think people want change. And so today I thought that we could talk about just one more thing. So the ESD school is going to become a university of some kind. But university in the old sense, where the traditional sense, where it meant people coming together, uni, as in a unification, unified. So it's different from how schools are operating now. Many schools, many universities are so profit-driven that they're falling short and they're losing sight of the deep mission within the university. We need to radicalize education in conjunction with the Psychoanalytic Institute, the Existential Psychoanalytic Institute Society. We hope to reinvigorate the whole notion of critical thinking, logic, translogic, new logics, poetics. To me, this is the heart and the soul of life, as doing the hard, difficult, heavy lifting in thinking. And that means, it means really taking yourself to task. It is a very, really difficult thing to do. It's not easy. We're talking about, I'll just put it in basic terms to start. People regard nature or forest land as some kind of instrumental use, as an object of instrumental use, that it's got to be good for something, whether that is lumber for your lumber yard or a place to shoot animals so you can brag to your friends, or catch fish and brag to your friends, or going into the forest for some kind of camping trip so that you and your family can say, well, we had a great camping trip in the so-and-so forest. And so you have to be on the lookout that even pleasure can be the object of an instrumental form of reasoning. But in discussions over weeks, and especially this last weekend, I just want to point out that it's also possible to think of nature as a word that describes stand-in. I didn't mean alien, but I mean to stand-in word for being. That nature is everything. It is life. It is water. It is the air you breathe. It is the basic deep substratum of anything you do in your life. It's not some amusement park. It's not a place where you drive your car around and look at gawking animals who don't want to be gawked at. And I don't care if you're, you know, just the random person off the street or, you know, a quote-unquote professional gawker. But we need to take a long, hard look about nature and what nature means, what it is. Nazarita, welcome to the show. We'd love to hear what you have to say.
Well, just thinking recently in our discussions on what it really looks like to commit. And, you know, this all goes back to responsibility. Whose responsibility is it to change environmental disasters or droughts that affect the world or water that's polluted? Whose responsibility is it? I recently have heard a lot of articles, read a lot of articles, and heard a lot of people putting the responsibility on maybe elected officials or someone that they think is in power that should be doing something to stop these horrific things that are going on that concern our water, food, earth, and how we're digging up mines and right around in California, the Salton Sea is now becoming this huge lithium excavating site. And I think to myself, okay, part of what we're discussing is responsibility. Whose responsibility is it? If we do something, each one of us, I did this last week in terms of what that looks like in how many people we influence. That it is our responsibility. We can't put a responsibility on an elected official if we are not willing to take those steps ourselves. And one of those is, I did this computation, and I shared it with you, that if one person is vegan and cruelty-free, you at least know 10 people, of which maybe 1 to 3 people might be influenced by that. And that those 1 to 3 people know 10 more people each. That's 30 more people, which then, you know, it just grows and grows and grows. And pretty soon you have communities that are cruelty-free and vegan and protecting the earth. But it starts really with you and I. It starts you and I as people who create a grassroots movement For instance, there's a lot more vegan restaurants than there were 10 years ago, that's for sure. A lot more people are talking about it, are really realizing the health benefits. If anything at all, there are health benefits to becoming more plant-based, that not killing another species. And I likened this, I was thinking of this yesterday, I likened this to cannibalism, that people, when people eat meat, everybody is concerned over water right now. The water is going to grow hay for cattle, and there's more and more cattle because people are eating beef. This is connecting the dots, and it's everyone's responsibility to say, this isn't a question of just purifying water. This is a question of stopping eating meat and eating another sentient animal. And so if you look at that in terms of cannibalism, there isn't much difference between eating someone who thinks, feels, cares for their young, is sad when someone close to them dies. This is how we interpret humans, but it applies to all species. And so if we insist on eating other species, we're cannibalist. That's what we're doing. We're practicing cannibalism. There isn't any difference between eating a leg and a thigh of a human than there is eating a thigh of a cat, of a cow, or a sheep, or a pig. There isn't any difference. And so when we start taking that responsibility, then we start having influence in the world. And then what will follow is our elected officials will follow that. Marketing will follow that. Big business will follow that. Firms and companies that are in control will follow that. If there wasn't a market for meat, they wouldn't have cows. They wouldn't be slaughtering cows. That is the end all of everything. If there isn't a market, then they will change how they produce goods. If there isn't a market for, you know, for anything, I used to liken this to strip clubs, because I knew people in a community that I lived that were really upset that there was a strip club. And my response was, if nobody went to the strip club wouldn't be there. So if you know someone going to the strip club and you don't want the strip club to be there, don't go to the strip club. It's as easy. It's just so very simple. And so that's been my thinking lately. We are the heart of that choice. If we do not make that choice, how can we expect someone else to make a law or to make a pronouncement or to put into effect something that we desire to have done, clean water, if we're not willing to make that first step? Where does our water come from? How do we use our water? You know, we are that change. And you know, it's kind of a cliche now, be the change you want to be. And that's it. We have to become that. And you were right. I mean, if you live with things that are sourced from cruel sources that cause violence and suffering, then you are a participant in that violence and cruelness. No matter how much you want to escape it, you are a part of that, and it influences you in ways that you may not even understand or know or be conscious of. But look at all the violence in the world today. It's escalating along with our meat eating. Meat eating is escalating, and it's growing. And if you want to make a correlation, there you go. I mean, we're continuing to be violent, and we're escalating violence in all ways. We're killing other beings. We're cutting down forests. We're digging up the earth. And now we have volcanoes erupting. The earth is upset. The earth, I believe, is a sentient being. And we are destroying that. We're destroying other species as well. So that's what I think. We are the change.
Right. So what you're talking about, it's the link. I totally was just hit with a lightning bolt of a thought. We have, on the one hand, we have these scientific and educational domains where where we have an economy of knowledge, right? And then we have human sciences, which attempt to regulate and govern human beings in our culture, in our country. And some of those are wellness disciplines. Others are just purely regulatory. But then the third discipline is the moral. And we've got a lot of moral content from religion through the centuries. We've gotten very little moral content through science, very, very little. I know because this is my area of study for my life. Morality, thinking about morality has been relegated to academia, frankly. That doesn't mean that people don't have ethics codes that are written down, the rules that they have to follow in some way. But in terms of the hard thinking about morality, I don't see it. I actually don't see it. I see a lot of authoritarianism about what we ought to do, but I don't see in my life a whole lot of other than the discipline of philosophy, of which morality is a component. So if you look at the human sciences, look at wellness. It has been my belief from day one, since the time I was old enough to think, that you'll never be happy in the world, you'll never be healthy, and you'll never have wellness unless you live a moral life. And I don't mean following the law or some silly ethics code or what I would call minimalist morality, you know, doing what everybody else does in a tradition of sorts. I mean really doing the hard work of thinking about how we ought to live. And I, having spent many, many years as a psychotherapist a while ago, I learned that pretty much 99% plus of all the clients that I ever had were living lives that were devoid of any real moral commitment. So you have the waning of the influence of the church and the synagogue and the mosque. You have serious problems that we've talked about on this radio show. And I believe, Nazarita, that the link between objective science, transformational capacities of humans, psychological wellness, stronger communities and societies must revolve around the moral. We are, you know, we just recently talked about this, the rise of meat eating. You're absolutely right. The data shows that we're eating more meat, killing savagely and barbarically, killing more sentient animals than ever. Some of the, I would call them, they're scientists who understand world economy. They're not just mathematicians, but they understand culture, and they understand food production. So part of the problem is that we continue to produce more and more people, and I'm so tired of people celebrating the birth of another child as if that gives them some right. That is a leftover. That's a remnant. And there's something about it. If you're a property, if you're a landowner and you have children, somehow you have rights that everybody else doesn't have or shouldn't have or couldn't have. So part of the problem is a completely insane, out of control idea about having children. It's crazy. If that's a math problem. But the second problem is that we don't have any integrative discourse like the discourse of morality. I'm talking about hard thinking, extremely rigorous thinking. And we don't have that tying together these disciplines. So we have out of control, totally either inept or scurrilous so-called scientists. I'm sorry, but just because somebody puts the name scientist on after their name doesn't make them a scientist. That's false. That is another delusion. And we have to go after everybody. There needs to be a moral discourse or we're done. And I do think that there is a convergence between the truth of things, I'll call it loosely, the truth of things and morality. If standards of morality and levels of moral thinking are so split off from the way things are, or in our case, resist, antagonize, and try to refute the way things are, we are so done as a species. And right now we're done because primarily morality revolves around kinship selection, kinship ties, this silly notions that you have moral duties to your family and a small group of friends, and then otherwise it's open season for competition. That is an unthinking, unreflective way of being, and it's destructive. We need to have a moral thinking that takes into account all ecosystems, the whole biosphere, every being in that biosphere has a right. And that's why I'm so against inheritance laws, Nazarita, in the United States. I'm totally against them because they continue to manufacture the falsity of distribution of wealth and transfer of wealth amongst the affluent. It continues to perpetuate exploitation. It's wrong. So how do we build this glue called the moral glue, where we really are very introspective and address rigorously responsibility, change, transformation, moral issues. I'm fed up with people who find a way out that it's in some way not their responsibility. That's childish. And I'm also fed up with the fat cats who aren't willing to make changes in their life. That it's wrong. It's really easy to be pious, falsely pious, and talk about ideas, but exclude yourself from change. We all need improvement. And like I said, I'm annoyed and fed up with people who talk about change, but and they figure, well, everybody else needs to change except them. They're somehow special. Everybody has to change. So how do you, I can tell you, Nazarita, we're, you know, at the ESD school and university, we will have classes about responsibility. Your responsibility to your space, to your place in the ecosystem, your moral duties, your pursuit of virtue. But how can we tie all this together as a culture, Nazarita, given that people are so confused and overwhelmed? Half the people are not, they don't understand, have no idea what moral thinking is all about. And then the remaining people, most of them are too selfish to include themselves in the moral community. How do we begin to heal this wound in human civilization?
Well, you know, there's if you look at the heart of all religions, they all teach the same thing. Love your neighbor as yourself. Goes for other species. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And so what is morality? And I think that sometimes people are caught in a limited view of morality, of being one, something is good or something is bad, and you're going to choose the good, but what is good? And so we live in a time that maybe things 100 years ago seemed to be good, like hunting. I'll give you that example. Hunting when there wasn't a whole lot of people, much less people on earth, and people hunted, and it was seen as a good thing. You hunted instead of buying a bunch of stuff. And now we realize that we have exploded in our population, and we are enjoying killing other species. That's what that phrase comes, good hunting, you know. Hey, I wish you good hunting. And where do you think that comes from? That comes from people enjoying hunting. They enjoy killing. So if you have every religion that teaches not to kill, except, of course, for those that are against your religion, then you have to say, what is a higher morality? What is it's looking on something and realizing that you have a responsibility. You have a responsibility to other species, to see them for who they are and to give them the same due that you would give yourself. We need space. They need space. It's like killing insects. I read a great article. It was somebody who was a tenant, a renter, and among two renters, and they were allowed to use the yard to grow organic vegetables. And they primed it. It was for years. For years, they primed the yard. No insecticides, pesticides, herbicides. And what they did was they grew flowers and herbs. And they came home one day, and the renter in front said, oh, yeah, I got rid of those flies. I sprayed this insecticide. And see the disconnect of responsibility. So the person who sprayed the insecticide ruined the garden. It's going to take years for it to be to go back, or they're going to have to rip it up and take all the soil out and put different soil in. But what the person didn't connect the dots is, like, if you get rid of the flies and insects, the bees eat insects. They sip from the nectar of plants. And bees are really in trouble in the earth, and they are the ones that allow other things to grow, like pollinate. They pollinate our world, and yet we want to get rid of their food source. And so this is ignorance. We're stuck in this time and age in ignorance. There's a lot of false information going around. There's a lot of people who have a false sense of what is right and wrong, that they are entitled to do these things. They are entitled to hunt and kill violently, not only other people who don't agree with them, as we see in a lot of situations around the world, but they don't want species to come into their private little yard or disturb them driving or flies or insects to get around their food or in their porch. It's like we have become obsessed with violence in the interest of what is right and wrong. Let's get rid of everything that interferes with our sense of what is private space. And I think maybe that's the key. What is our private space? We have grown in design to say that the bigger is better. We need this private space around us. And what we're really longing for, I believe at the heart of this, is we're longing and not able to put into direct action. We are longing for nature. And so what we do is we expand our personal space that is faux nature, thinking that is going to help us. It's like somebody who's starving, eating a bunch of sugar. They're thinking that this is filling them up, but it's not food that will sustain them. And I see that as our society. It's ignorance. We're in ignorance, and it's more and more through social media, through everything, propagating these insane ideas and this ways of thinking that are just pure ignorance, and people are believing it. It's uneducated choices. And how do we educate? I believe it comes back to personal responsibility.
Well, that's absolutely it is. And the thing is, nobody, I think pretty much nobody can say they don't have access to information. You go to the library and get on a free computer. There's tons of information on the internet. Some of it's not so good. Most of it's great. But that's the very core of the Earth Science Design School and University, is to build a community bigger and bigger. Not for profit motives or anything like that, but to widen the community so that we can learn from specialists who know things that other people don't know. You know, for example, I'll give just one example. So Arthur Furstenberg knows a lot about electricity and Wi-Fi emissions. Most people don't. Most people have a rudimentary understanding. I'm working with every last second I have to gain a better understanding, part of environmental pollution, and it will kill life forms, just like pesticides. We all need to understand pesticides better and herbicides. You know, I'll give you another example. So you may or may not like rats, but if you go to the alleys of every restaurant in your town, there will be little gray boxes in them, and they have an entrance. And rats go in there, they're baited to go in there, and then they kill them. You should know that. You know, make up your own mind after that, but you should at least know what's going on. And so Earth Science Design School and University is going to have classes that just disseminate facts to help people understand the fact of the matter, the simple science, the practical science, the complex theoretical science, all of it. But more so, to have critical thinking seminars where people can talk, you know, where we can teach each other how to think better, how to think our way through this. But most regular universities don't do that. They can try, but they're really circumscribed by rules of accreditation, politics, boards of trustees, you know, there's a lot of, et cetera, et cetera. There are a lot of factors. And that's why we're seeing the rise of schools around the world, you know, like Ecoversity, for example, but schools around the world that are not state-funded or elite, rich people-funded schools that really determine the boundary conditions of what a school can teach. You know, this happened in American psychology. I spent a year studying curricula at most PhD programs in psychology in the United States. And they're all driven by a certain kind of neoliberalist capitalist logic, every one of them. And there's a few exceptions. There's just a few exceptions. I'm not going to name them now on the show. There's a few exceptions. There's also some exceptions within those schools. And those people are marginalized, those professors. But if you compare a PhD in psychology in America with a PhD in psychology in Europe, they're really different. They're not the same. They're just not the same. Well, wouldn't it be good to have people talk about that? Sure. Let's talk about it. You know, this is not to impugn or criticize in a negative way, but it's about to examine the situation with a really super brilliant light. That's ESD school and university. We want to put a light on things. People will be welcome. We're in the process of writing classes right now, and so stay tuned. Stay tuned, because, you know, it's coming. So I want to go back to how we started the show today. You know, we're talking about conceptions of nature, and it's more to it than meets the eye. Some people are taught to believe that, most of us, the nature is just something that's out there, and there's a whole lot of it, and you can go into it. If you got money, you can pay money for somebody to kind of be your guide in some way, or you can go to a bourgeoisie, a piece of nature where you stay in a really nice rustic cabin, or somebody guides you with a ski trip or a mountain biking trip or a hiking trip or a camping trip or a mountain climbing trip or a fishing trip. But those are all commodified. They're all driven by money, profit. And so it's wrongheaded from the get-go. It is a distortion about the nature of nature. It's a distortion. So if we start thinking about nature not as just some standing reserve of resources that we get to go have fun in, we've worked hard and now we get to go have fun in the resource. We look at it differently, that it is the very breath of in your body. It's the nature is the breath in your lungs. It's everything. If you see a butterfly, that butterfly has every much right to live as you do. That's morality. But even scientifically, you kill the butterfly, you kill the ecosystem. We should not celebrate people who go out and kill any kind of living being for a trophy, whether it's a bug, snake, a bear, a wolf. That should not be celebrated. That is a destruction of our life. And furthermore, it's something that we all need to learn more profoundly. This is true. What I'm about to say. It is a fact that everything is interrelated. And it is a fact that anything you do does have an impact across the world. It's not magic. It doesn't need to be magic. It's very simple, clear-headed thinking. We are all completely embedded and enveloped within each other. The whole idea of separateness, being able to stand back and look at the world, look at the nature, is false. It is an illusion. Don't believe it. Don't buy it. Don't buy it. I was looking at Nazarita. I was looking at pictures of Mount Everest over the last week, and because of global warming, there's a lot of snowmelt in one of the highest peak in the world. And what do they find? Urine, garbage, climbing gear, dead bodies. It is like what you'd expect in a dystopian novel about an inner city. You know, where you're walking, the air is cloudy and it's polluted and it's night and everything is sort of wet, dirty wet, oily wet, and you're walking down the street and it's 10 o'clock at night and the street is not that well lit because there's not enough money to light the streets anymore, and you walk down an alleyway and it's got tipped off pavement, and in the alleyway is garbage, food, dead animals, a couple of dead people, you know, toxins. That's where we are. And that's what's on Mount Everest right now. At Camp 4, that's the fourth camp. That's not base camp. That's the camp right before the summit. And, well, who gets to Camp 4? Most everybody up there comes from money. They're people who want to go out and experience the world. Or Ecuador. They want to drill for more oil in Ecuador. After already ruining part of Ecuador, they want to ruin more of it. And to kill any indigenous person who gets in their way. The Amazon now has some signs of becoming a garbage pit, a dump, like the top of Mount Everest, or like the alley garbage can. That's where what the Amazon is becoming. That's what national parks are becoming. I am sickened at how people have treated Yosemite and how they have treated Yellowstone National Park and Glacier National Park. It's not a movie set, and it's not a zoo. It's where people live. They're people animals. It's called the Greater Yellowstone Ecosystem. It's an ecosystem. And we go in there, we want to gawk at everything. People who have, bless their hearts, they want the transcendence of nature. They want the well-being of nature. They want nature. They don't want to be alienated anymore from life. And they think they can go up to Yellowstone and find life. And the best they can do is to drive their car through the park and gawk at animals. Not only gawk at them, agitate them in their own home. You have to leave them alone. So-called sportsmen feel like they have some kind of inherent natural right to go up into the backcountry and carry guns, and that if a bear charges them, they can shoot them. They feel like they have an inherent right to enter somebody's backyard and shoot them. What's going on? So do you want to bring us to a close, Nazarita, today? About nature?
Yeah, just a couple things. Mount Everest, the reason why it's going on is people look at Mount Everest as a thing to be conquered. And thinking in their unresponsibility, their disresponsibility, you might call it that, is that everything that they do will be hidden by the snow. It will be hidden, it will be covered over, and now we are faced with what we have done to nature, thinking it's a thing. And then the second quick part was about checking off boxes of romantic partners, that this relates to Mount Everest. We think something is one thing when we look at a person, a relationship, or nature as a thing, and then we start to uncover what it really is, and we are unprepared for the truth of what everyone really is, the truth of nature, the truth of other beings, and the truth of ourselves.
Well, thank you, Nazarita. Thanks to me. To the Earth Science Design firm, research institute, and school. You can see what we're doing in design if you go to earthsciencedesign.com. We're in the process of building a whole website tab on that exact site for our education, and we will be bringing classes to the market very soon. And when I say market, I mean market of ideas. I don't mean... But this is not about money. It's about something far more important that we'll get to next week. Have a good week, everybody. This is the Epis Radio signing out, and we'll be back next Monday.